We're continuing the Sefer HaMidot. We're up to page Resh Mem Beis. And the Magen Midovna had said that he will clarify the importance of service of Hashem that stems from a decision. It's not just a habit. It's not just second nature. And last time we discussed the idea that decision brings about action. And the more decisive we are, the more clear we are in our decision, the more consistent we will be in our action. Then we discussed last time that the main reason probably why people are inconsistent is because they haven't decided. Shenit, secondly, we're on Reish Mem Beis, Toedet El Haoseh, Ki Kol Maaseh Muskemet Mirtzon HaLev V'Chefetz HaNefesh Terav El Haoseh. Anything you decide that you want will find favor before you. And this is a phenomenal concept. This is a concept that can be applied to ourselves, that could be applied to our spouses, that could be applied to our children, that could be applied to our boss. It takes a certain amount of skill, but at the end of the day, the root of it all is that if a person feels like they made the decision, then they are far more apt to like the decision. So, let's take a case. Your wife says, I want you to stay home with me today. And you're thinking, I have a huge presentation. The boss and the CEO are going to be there. And I have a wife who's not going to take it well if I say I can't. So what do you say? You say, that's such a great idea. Let's just think for a minute what we're going to tell the boss because of the presentation. And what I could tell him to tell the CEO, but that's a fantastic idea. Suddenly she says, well, you can't do that. And you say, oh, let's think, I guess you're right. What'd you do? You didn't tell her. You let her decide. It's a world of a difference. It's a world of a difference. A person sees that the girl he's dating is immodest and chatting with guys on Facebook. And he says, everything's great, I just want her to stop chatting with guys on Facebook. So he could come and give her a lecture about how immodest it is and how inappropriate it is, and are you going to continue that when you're married? That's one way to go. Or he could steer the conversation about how he's just learned about how this is the direction a person should go, and you know he's really taking steps in that direction, and he didn't say anything about her. We all act much better when we feel we're in control. And the same thing applies to educating our children. Very often, you're going to want your children to do certain things. And it seems like the quickest way to get there is by telling them, do that. But it might be more productive if you say, guys, you're going to want to play checkers when we get home from shul tonight. And with the room looking like this, we're going to have no place to play checkers. You just explain them why it's in their interest and they can make the decision. If I'm going to be busy cleaning up your room, I'm not going to have time to play checkers with you. Their decision. The same idea could be posed as a threat, as a demand, or as a fact that allows them to make their own decision, and we all act better when we feel like we made the choice. And this is a pivotal point in human relations. If you can spell out to the other party what your form of logic is and let them reach the conclusion, ooh, you've accomplished a lot.
You have to have patience for that now.
You have to have patience?
It's so much easier. It's like, are you crazy? I have a presentation.
Right.
Stay home.
Right.
We even take the time to ice and curl your anger and...
I once taught in an institution that didn't have a direction. Yeah, they were trying to define themselves for years. What's our purpose in life, right? You set up an institution, you educate, but what makes you unique? Like, why do we deserve to exist? What's unique about us? So that's a pretty sad state to be in. So when I first met them and they told me they want me on board, I said, you know, I'm happy to join. But I feel like you need a direction. And they said, of course we have a direction. And then the two CEOs started talking, and they both said two completely different directions. And I said, I didn't hear you both say the same thing. And they said, of course we said the same thing, you just didn't understand. So I said, okay. A year passed, I tried the same thing, got nowhere. Third year passed, tried the same thing, got nowhere. So I started realizing this isn't going to work. So I tried another tactic. I came and I said, why don't you write a mission statement where you want to go? And they said, maybe, and didn't. Every tactic I tried directly didn't work. But then I spoke to the CEO and I started discussing with him the attributes of the institution we have and the strengths and the potential and where this institution could get to. And at the next staff meeting, I suddenly hear him speaking about the purpose of this institution is and the strengths of the institution is. And I'm thinking, okay, I said that. But I didn't come and tell him. I didn't tell him what to do. I just showed him certain strengths, and he formed the mission statement. The rest of the staff were blown over. They were like, we never knew we were teaching in a institution that had this goal, that goal, and the other goal. They walked out of that meeting like, whoa. 4 years, I got nowhere trying to talk to them directly by letting them reach the conclusion. I didn't even mean to get them to that conclusion. I had just, in conversation, I was showing appreciation of what had been accomplished. And there, they made great strides. We will often in life, we'll meet brick walls when we try to force our opinion. But if we can let the other person make that decision, you'll be surprised to find that very often they're going to make the same decision. I'll tell you the cutest and maybe most exasperating example. I had this with more than one kid. The kid gets up in the morning and says, Abba, what'd you make me for breakfast? So I say, a peanut butter sandwich. And the kid says, no, I want a jelly. So I said, you're right, I made you a jelly sandwich. So the kid said, no, I want peanut butter. And now, it's not one kid that did this to me. It's a few of the kids. They get to the stage where if you said it, I don't want it. So then I said, okay, tell me what you want. So the kid says, what do you mean, I told you? I said, what you told me is that whatever I say, you don't want.
Oh, both together.
No. So the kid stands there thinking. They suddenly realize, hey, that's what I did. But that's, on the one hand it's cute, on the other hand it's exasperating, but the truth is we're all that way. Why is it that mitzuveh oseh, Chazal tells, when you're commanded to do something, you get more sachar, you get more reward. Why? What if a person is blind and he's not obligated to do the mitzvos, but then he goes ahead and does it anyways, he gets less sachar than someone who's obligated to do it. Very simple. You came home thinking, I'm going to take out the garbage for my wife, for my mother. I'm going to help with that. Suddenly your mother says, Mike, could you take out the garbage? And you have 15 reasons why you can't take out the garbage now. Because you feel like your freedom was taken from you. And the second you feel like you're being told to do it, you don't want to do it. The second benefit, says the Magen Midubna, is that when a person decides, then the action finds more favor in his eyes. It's more pleasant for him to do it. And as he likes it, he will move to see it accomplished. And the antithesis, when something, you don't want to do something, so then suddenly it's the most bitter thing in the world. Someone who's hungry for bread, and he spends a few hours hungry because he can't afford to buy a slice of bread. So maybe you guys never had this experience, but I've had it, that I'm walking around hungry and I don't have a penny in my pocket. Now you're hungry and you have no way of satiating your hunger. You know that if you would have decided, I'm not eating today, you'd be okay. But when suddenly it's been decided for you, I left my wallet at home, I can't buy anything, I'm hungry. Now suddenly every minute is terrible. And our experience proves it. Everything you have, if you decide you want it, then it's easier to carry the load. And this is true about so many things in life. You can tell in advance where a person is headed. A guy comes to Machon Meir and he says, I'm going to make this year work and I'm going to grow and I'm going to learn and I'm going to get to know Hebrew and make new friends. That's what happens. Another guy comes in and says, I wonder if this place is worth anything, and the Zionism bit, and Rav Kook, and all these Israelis, and all these Russians, and Spanish, and French. If you spend your time, well, I'm not sure if I like it, then you're not going to like it. There's a lot to be bothered by. You walk into marriage with the attitude, I'm going to make this work, it's going to be great. Well, you're going to make it work. You walk into marriage with, it's going to be great, assuming that certain things don't happen, and then when they do happen, you suddenly say, that's not what I was expecting. That's not fair. That's not nice. I don't want that. I'm not sure I want this. So then, no. Then it becomes a bitter toil. So every decision we make, the greater our decision, the easier it is to carry. And it's amazing how this is so. I don't know if you ever had the experience of being sick and having to go out of the house. Where you have a raging fever, you're throwing up, but you have something which you have to do today. And you can't not do it. Suddenly you can do it, in spite of the fact that you have a raging fever and you feel like you can't move out of bed. And other days, you have a lesser fever, you don't have any strength, you can't do anything. The verse says in Mishle, Lev Adam Yechalkel Machaleu, our heart feeds into our illness. Meaning our temperament, our state of mind is one of the greatest factors of how we feel. There's a fantastic story. Let's see if I could remember the details. There was a caretaker that would take care of people's graves, and every year there was an old woman who'd come barely able to move. And on the anniversary of the death of her child, she would bring a bouquet of flowers, a big, beautiful bouquet. And one year, her Rolls Royce drives up and she's all ashen and she looks so emaciated that it seems like she's not going to live another week. And she takes out this basket with flowers and she calls over the caretaker and she says to him, look, I've been coming here for years and I've paid my dues. And I don't know if I'm going to make it back here ever again. I'm asking you to please take care of this plot out of the goodness of your heart, even though I don't know if I'm ever coming back. And the caretaker looks at her and says, such a beautiful bouquet of flowers. Wouldn't it be better to give it to the living than to give it to the dead? Don't you think the living deserve your flowers more than the dead? And she gives him a look, if looks can kill. She walks over to the plot, puts down the bouquet, and he tells her, but ma'am, I'll take care of the plot, don't worry. She could barely make it back into the Rolls Royce, and the Rolls Royce pulls off. A few months pass, and the Rolls Royce rolls back into the cemetery. The woman comes out of the Rolls Royce, the driver opens the door, and she's looking like a new person. She walks over to the caretaker and says to him, you know, you changed my life. Because I was focused on the child I lost. And so my life was dwindling. And I had reached the point where I didn't think I'd have strength to live another day. But when you told me that line, I got very upset, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I suddenly realized it wasn't only the flowers that were focused on the dead, it was my whole life that was focused on the dead. And I went home and I thought about it, and then I made a change in my life. And so today I suddenly have strength again. So ruach ish, the spirit of a person where our spirit's holding, that's yechalkel, that really feeds into the way we feel. We think, I get up in the morning, I feel lethargic, I don't have a zest for life, let me go take some ginseng, let me go take some echinacea, there are a lot of things out there that will give you the zest of life. The first thing starts here. Decide, I want to have a zest for life. Talk like you have a zest for life. Move like you have a zest for life. You'll have a zest for life. So, experience proves that the more decisive we are, the more we decide we want something, the easier it is to accomplish it.
V'yesh inyan asher yehav el oseo gam ken im ha'teshukam shutefet gam ken im ha'askama.
And there's an idea that something finds more favor in the eyes, in a person's eyes, when your yearning is in line with your decision. And that he will expand on as we proceed. We'll get back to that point. Any service that's in conflict with our desire, that's very bitter. וכן אנחנו רואים בעבדים ומשרתים כי ילאו ייגעו במלאכת אדוניהם ובעל הבית יעשה כפליים ולא ילא. You see it. Workers are so tired come the lunch break. But the boss, he can work through the lunch break and he doesn't notice the time that's passing and he's doing twice the work that they're doing. Why? כי אליו תארע והמלאכה מרוב הסכמתו וחפצו. Because he likes the work. He's decided. He wants this business to succeed. But the worker, he's doubly embittered. He doesn't want to be there. He just wants his paycheck at the end of the month. So again, the second benefit is that when you decide you want something, if a person decides if it's a product of his decision and not a product of habit, so then the action will be more pleasant to him. And he will have more strength to accomplish it. And this is, again, this is a philosophy in and of itself. You know, this whole paragraph that we just learned is its own philosophy. And it's applicable. You can apply this in so many areas of your life. So, we'll pick up here with Hashem tomorrow.